Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 49 of the Peak of Serenity podcast. We are getting up there in the episode count. I am your host, Emelson, and I am, as always, joined by Anomaly.
Hello.
And this week, we are having our very slightly late post-Christmas episode.
Yes.
This was an exciting week. This was a very exciting week, mostly because of the race to World First, which did wrap up this week. Nobody in the race had to raid on Christmas. The World First was taken by then, so I actually don't know if anybody did raid on Christmas, but Echo is done, Limit was done. There is currently not a World Third, and we will be talking about that in a little bit.
Yes.
But before we even get to our regular first section talking about the stuff that happened this week, I do want to mention, for those that listen to the audio version, you might have noticed that last week's did not sound the same. And that is because I forgot to start our recording bot before we started the episode. So I wasn't able to do much audio correction. Like, my skills are not that deep. I can't do it when everything's mixed down to one stereo track already. I had to basically rip the audio from our Twitch stream, which meant it was how it was. I also realized just now Anom is too quiet on the stream, so let me turn him up.
Oh, nice.
Boom, 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 boom.
I have a lot of important things to say today, Emelson. I need my voice loud.
I believe it. I believe it. Yeah. So with that out of the way, I guess even one more thing. Well, one of the big things that did happen this week is Christmas. If you are Christmas. In North America, Europe, it's a big, kind of a big deal. How was your Christmas, Anom?
It was amazing. It was fun. So I'm older, so I have kids. It's nice when you have kids actually doing Christmas because I get really, really excited about the littlest thing. My youngest has learned the phrase, "This is my favorite." It's my favorite. So every present she opened, she was like, "It's my favorite." I was like, "Everything can't be your favorite," but it was good.
Obviously, every time she gets something, that's her new favorite, right?
That's true.
She had the new thing.
She had a lot of new favorites. It was a good Christmas. I got a bunch of Legos. I posted a picture on Twitter. And I built them. So I got the Razor Crest from The Mandalorian, which was a lot of fun to build. And then I got the Pirate Island, or the Pirate Cove Island basically like a broken up pirate ship is an island, but then you can take the ship parts off and make a bigger ship with it. It's super cool. And literally all I want to do is build Legos. I'm done with WoW, I think. I'm just going to build Legos.
You're just going to invest in Legos and maybe start streaming Legos. That's gonna be your new gig.
Exactly. It was so much fun. They're gonna eventually be here. If you're watching the video stream, you can see, but it'll be on the desk thing behind me, or card, whatever this thing is. It's a table or something. But it'll eventually be there. So you'll be able to see them. But yeah, they're upstairs. My kids played with them. They literally broke the masts on one of the ships over, which is great to try and fix. It was fun. So how was yours?
Pretty chill. So we had some nice bad weather the day before Christmas, and weren't sure if we were gonna do we had planned to do a small family get together, but we just people that were in town, and almost didn't happen. It was a small Christmas miracle that all the roads got cleared in time for us to do it Christmas morning. So that was fun. My sister has a 1-year-old, and so they were very excited about mostly the boxes and the wrapping paper, and less so the actual toys.
That's awesome.
Got some Stellaris DLC. I have a co-op game going with one of my brothers.
Awesome.
So that's going to be fun. We're going to have to start a new game so I can use the DLC. And the other thing that's occupied my week is I've been looking for a new apartment. So in about 2 weeks, fingers crossed, this entire room will look much different because it will, in fact, be in an entirely different building.
That's awesome. That is awesome. So you found a place?
A place. I haven't heard back from them yet because I did the application thing the day before Christmas Eve.
Gotcha.
So
Yeah.
They weren't in the office Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. So I'll find out Monday or Tuesday.
Oh, very cool. Very
and
cool.
And I'll have to do more looking, which is always fun.
I hate that's the one thing I'm glad that I don't do anymore. It's like looking for places to live. I hated it. I hated moving. So
it sucks so much.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Awesome. Well, glad Christmas.
So in WoW though, we also had a very exciting week.
Yes.
You wanna take us through what happened?
Yeah, so we got some pre-Christmas hotfixes, which weren't that exciting. I think the biggest thing to pull out of this was they did make a couple changes to some bosses, like you can no longer spell reflect the debuff on Lady Darkvein, that drops the adds, I believe. They fixed Dancing Fever on Council, so it now actually spawns or triggers correctly, which is... We'll talk about it in a bit, but on the kills last week, so if you kill it last week, it was much easier because you only got one or two Dancing Fevers the entire fight, and now you'll get them basically every time a mob either dies or reaches 50%, which was the correct timing. So a Dancing Fever is the new mythic-only debuff where you essentially goes on, I think, four or five players, and you have to jump to get rid of your stacks, and every jump does raid-wide damage. So... just some more raid-wide damage. And they also made an update to the timer for the other side, or the other side. So just a couple of things. No real big class changes, you know.
They fixed the Necrotic Quake bolstering thing, where you could one-shot bosses with the Fleshcrafter.
Yes, I did see that, actually. Yeah, that's hilarious. So yeah, so nothing too big in terms of hotfixes. A couple minor things that you can tell, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, looks like they're I think the big thing is the Council of Blood one is it just makes the fight harder from a healing perspective. So
that's definitely the biggest one. I do think it's funny that Glyph of Destruction, you could line of sight.
An Artificer.
Yeah, it's not necessary to do that because the boss doesn't seem that hard once people like learn the dance, but I can totally see setting up a transcendence behind something that gives LOS. And just transcending out, not getting the debuff, and then just waddling back to the boss.
That's hilarious. That's funny. Yeah, and they said they fixed the Warlock summoning. I don't know if they have yet. So if people don't know...
We could not summon in Heroic on Tuesday.
Okay. Yeah, we had issues summoning on Wednesday in our Mythic Clear, because we moved our raid day up one day. So it'll be interesting. To say the least.
And that's the real big downside of Christmas week. Raiding is kind of spooky around holidays.
Yeah, it's all over the place for us.
Our normal raid day is Friday, Sunday. Yesterday was Christmas. Yesterday was Friday.
Yeah.
So obviously, like, 20 of 26 people were not able to raid yesterday. So we are doing... We moved that day to Sunday, and it's still, or to Monday, and it's still like only 20 people can make it. So if anybody like can't make it, we're just gonna have a one day raid week, which is it's annoying. It is like I know the rest of the world is having to deal with this too, so it's not like too annoying because I know other guilds are in the same situation, but.
Yeah,
like the midweek team in our guild raids Tuesday, Wednesday, like didn't have any issues.
So. They were perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we were missing, I think, like one or two people on our Wednesday because we're normally Tuesday, Thursday. So we missed like one or two. It just sucked that one of the people was our priest, and we were doing Sun King progression. So like,
So Guardian Spirit. Guardian Spirit.
Yeah, we had to use an alt priest for it, which I mean, the guy, not as geared, not very, you know, not that he's not good, just like doesn't know priest as well. Yeah. So it was rough. We did do some progression on it. We should kill it this week coming up, but it was definitely a rough 4 hours. So
So how far are you guys in the instance at this point?
So we are what's that, four, three, four? We have the first two, Huntsman.
First two, Hunger, and then Hungering Destroyer. And
then I guess we're only 3 of 10. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, so our next one's Sun King. We'll probably do Sun King, Artificer, and then Lady Darkvein. I think that'll be the order. I don't know though. I don't make up the order. I just show up. All I know is Miss Weaver's pump on Sun King. It's the most fun I've ever had. So, are you second guessing my progression?
No, sorry. There's a spam bot in Twitch chat, and gotcha. I'm blocking and reporting them.
Nice. So yeah, so that is that was our progression on. I think that's the hot fixes for this week. So, next up was. I don't want to go spend, I don't know how much time we spend on this, but next up was a little bit of drama coming out of the World First Race, but it really affected, I think, more of the community at large, which was Nagi, who is a raider in Echo, a very prolific, like, add-on writer, weak or writer, just general is very big in those communities. He is the author of Mythic Dungeon Tools. Yes. And then he also has a bunch of weak ores that he's written, like most notably probably it's the cooldown tracker front end to Zen tracker that a lot of teams use. But he's got a bunch of other stuff, like he's written, you know, an interrupt tracker that's really good in Mythic Plus. Those are the two big ones I use of them. I don't know if there's others, but some big stuff. And what he ended up doing was he pulled down all his weak ores, so they're no longer public. And then he's also basically removed all of the mob data from Mythic Dungeon Tools. And you can get it, but you have to be a Patreon or a Twitch subscriber to get the data, basically, to load it back in. And this all stemmed from kind of just I'm not going to say typical internet trolling, but he essentially was trolled on his stream after Limit had killed Cyrodiilnathrius. And he seemed to kind of sort of get very upset with that and just sort of pulled everything down from there. So,
yeah.
It sucks. I mean, there's ways around it. I mean, like his, particularly for MDT, it's hosted on GitHub. You can go back to a back commit and get the data if you really want it. But I think
Someone forked it already. There is now Man Baby Dungeon Tools. No comment on that.
Yeah, but no.
It is open source, like a lot of other community tools, like SimCraft, like WoW Analyzer. So even if Nagi tries to put the data behind a paywall, we still have access to the old data. There's already a fork of it, meme name or not.
Yeah.
I expect there will be other forks of it with less jerkish names that are the ones that actually get updated, because while Nagi is the main developer behind Mythic Dungeon Tools, he's not the only person that contributes to the data collection.
Yeah.
And so that's something that, you know, the people that are contributing in that way are not going to want to put it under a paywall that only Nagi profits from.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and the other problem is too, is like it's like I looked at the license too. He licensed under GNU, which basically means like you can take it and do whatever you want with it. Yeah. Right. Like there's not, like, if people who don't understand like open source licensing, like GNU's what the Linux kernel's under, probably one of the first big, actually might have been actually the first big open source license like agreement out there. And essentially you can do whatever you want. Like the GNU license kind of gives you carte blanche to take the whatever the source code is, modify it however you want it, repackage however you want it. The biggest thing though is I think you have to keep the GNU license in place for anything you copy, basically.
Yeah, not to get like too caught up in the like minutia of open source licensing, but this is a fairly common thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of software out there like this. A lot of the add-ons that people use are licensed in similar terms, which is why, you know, when something goes unmaintained, someone else can come and pick it up and continue maintaining it without having to worry about, you know, legal repercussions from basically taking somebody else's work.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it definitely sucks. I think the side of the story that I kind of feel bad on is like, Nagi just seems like he's in a tough spot right now. Right. Just like, watching the streams, like watching some of the clips from it. Right. I hope he's okay. Like ultimately, like it sucks for the community that he pulled this, but I think the bigger thing is like, I just hope he's okay.
Yeah. Right. Like I've seen a couple of screenshots that people posted. I'm not going to repost them here. That makes it seem like he's having a real bad time right now.
Yeah.
Based on things that he said in like his patron only channels and stuff like that. And some amount of this backlash he's getting is certainly self-inflicted.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, there's no real defending some of the stuff he's done here.
Right.
But at the same time, there were, I mean, you've seen Twitch chat before.
Yeah, I mean, the internet's a place full of assholes. Like, we can be pretty honest with it, right? Like, it's just people who just are rude and like, a lot of times, like, it's some people can take it, other people can't. So, you know, I think, yeah, in this situation, it just sucks that his reaction is not going to garner, like, a good reaction from a large amount of people, right? Like, this is really going to kind of sort of pile on to him, which it shouldn't, but, I mean, generally, that's what happens when you sort of take sort of drastic stuff like this or drastic action like this. So,
yeah. And so there are forks. I don't think the community has settled on the direction to go at right. this point. I think a lot of people are kind of hoping that he gets a grip and just undoes this, but paywalling the data is not something that is like a trivial thing to do. That took some time for him to do.
Oh, yeah.
So, I kind of feel like it's set in stone, and we're gonna all be switching to some other random word that starts with M dungeon tools.
Yeah,
a couple months or a couple weeks.
I mean, the other thing is like the I mean, maybe not a good thing out of this, but one thing out of this is that I found, like a web sort of app version of MDT called Keystone Guru.
Yeah.
Which I don't think, I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen it before, but it's basically like. Yeah, it's basically like MDT, but in a web browser. So if you run two monitors, it's actually really helpful. That's one of the biggest issues I had with it. That's
super useful.
Yeah, one of the biggest issues I had with MDT is that because it's in game, to like view the route mid game or like mid run, like you'd have to open up the window. It covers part of your screen. There's not really a good way to get an overlay view of what route you said you were doing at the start, unless you like sort of memorize it in your head. So, I mean, it seems like, I think you're pulling it up here on the screen for those watching on video, but the nice part is that it sort of gives you that, if you have a second monitor, you can sort of view it. I'm assuming too, there's probably ways to like use like an overlay, like if you're trying to overlay like a web page or something, I'm sure there's programs out there that'll do it. So you can kind of see it as you do it. But yeah, I mean, it's got a lot of the same features as MDT does, it's just in a web browser. So it's pretty cool. I'm going to check it out, definitely, sort of starting this week, and a lot of the keys that I run, see how well it works. But as a tank specifically, it's probably really useful. And really, if you have two monitors, I don't know why you wouldn't use it, because it gets you something on a second monitor.
Absolutely right, because I was very much like doing keys this week, pulling up MDT in between polls where I wasn't sure exactly where I was going next and needed to double check it. It's like, especially like the Ardenweald wing in the other side, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Which of these identical bird packs am I pulling? How many of them do I need? There's like seven of them that have three birds. They're all the same.
Exactly.
And I just needed to know, okay, how many am I pulling? Where are the ones that are actually different and have a baby bird that's going to pull the entire world?
Yeah.
It's a dangerous place.
Yeah. I mean, and I've used MDT like when I tanked last season at the end of BFA to like check percentages through the dungeon too. So like as I get to certain checkpoints, either like before or after bosses, being able to say like when I kill this boss, I should be at this percentage. And that way, like I know that I've not missed anything as I've gone through it. So yeah, I mean, keystone.guru is the site. Check it out. I don't know, to be fair, don't know how accurate it is. That's the biggest thing. Yeah. But at least in terms of like a viable replacement, it seems like it's been around even as far back as last season. So
yeah, and this is something like we'll put the link in the show notes. I'm very curious to see how this pans out. You know, when there's something explosive that happens like this, this is the time that other smaller tools, lesser known tools like this are gonna really get talked about and explored. And, you know, the community will come out of this better for it, regardless of what Nagi does.
Yeah.
The only real loser in this situation, like the only one who's losing anything in this situation is Nagi.
Yeah. Yeah. It is what it is. But But yeah, hopefully some good comes out of this one. So so that was the drama for the week, I'll say. And then the other thing that happened this week was actually yesterday on Christmas Day, Limit, GM and raid leader Max, essentially did a review of their Nyalotha progression. Essentially broke down boss by boss, really like why they ran the comps they did, what was their strategy, what was their testing strategy versus what they did on live. Really, really informative. And I think it's, if you are in a guild that is maybe not like US or world top 100, but is in that sort of upper echelon after that, right? It's definitely worth a view. I think if you go any lower, like the guides and videos out there are going to be helpful, and just like, here's how you do the mechanics. But and it's probably be helpful even if you're at that lower level. But really, what the interesting thing to me about this is the way they've approached, way he approaches the fights and why they run certain things they run, why they pick certain classes, what their thought process is in terms of like dealing or handling certain mechanics, and even why they did not do anything. And he did do a couple of things where he's like, if I was killing this today in a guild, here's how I would do it differently than the way we did it, right?
Yeah. Huntsman, using Huntsman as an example, he went through not just the limit strat, the changes that they made because there was the buff to the fight between testing and live, but also he went through the strategy that he would use if you don't have the immunes that are necessary to immune the Sin Seekers.
Right.
Which is a very different strategy. And similar other fights, you know, he went through changes to the strategy he would do if you were trying to do the boss now. So I would definitely like, he's got them highlighted on his Twitch channel, I believe. And I would like 100%, if you are raiding Mythic this tier, go and watch those videos and get it. It's great, not only from the like learn the boss fights for this tier kind of perspective, but also from the like how to approach raid prep, how to approach strategy prep,
right,
kind of perspective. I watched a lot of it while he was live, and I'm going to go back and review some specific bosses that we're working on.
Yeah.
That's exactly
what I did
in the near future. Like we're going to be pulling Hungering Destroyer and hopefully killing it tomorrow night. And they used a very different strat than most people. Like most people on Hungering Destroyer right now use the four corners strat.
Yeah.
Where you've got the four markers down. It's the Vectis style thing where like it groups on each marker, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And they did something entirely different, which I didn't realize because I missed that part of their stream because I was working when they killed Hungering Destroyer. Where they just had like the ranged in the back just kind of spread out and the melee all stacked on one side of the boss and just kind of like had Max calling.
Interesting thing they did, so what they did was that, and this is actually a really good idea, is that so other than the first group, every group after that got miasma, the people who initially soaked were those who just had miasma because your debuff will have reset. So basically they could only always guarantee at least one person soaking with clean stacks on the next set of miasmas, which was a very, very good idea, right?
Yeah.
Because even with one person, you take, while you're not healing and you're not stable, you're still losing health, you basically like limit the rot damage initially, which was sort of Max's point. And then like Max, sat there and basically had another weak aura that was like, here's the people who have zero stacks, and they would help soak anybody that got low. I would recommend Limit did this. They posted all the weak auras they used. I would grab the Hungering Destroy weak aura if you're progressing on that
fight. Absolutely.
Because it's part, even if it's just for the health, like seeing people who have miasma, how much health they have and like how much time is left before the miasma drops, like in a very concise box, is huge. Because then you can tell, as like in Raider, you can make the individual assessment, like, do I need to go soak this person or not? And like, if there's 2 seconds left, they're at half health. You don't need to soak them. You save yourself a stack or two, right? For the next ones to come out and potentially even a reset, right? If you're low. So it's sort of time in your debuff. So yeah. But the breakdown is super, it's long. I would go through it. I think you're doing the right thing of like looking at it as you get to certain bosses.
Yeah.
I was building Lego, so I had Max on in the background as I was putting together a pirate ship.
Yep. I don't remember what I was doing. I think it was Flaming Torghast.
Nice. So yeah, it's definitely really informative, and it's funnily enough, I wish that they would do this during the race. I know it's probably more difficult to do it then, but as they kill bosses, like getting someone who was a part of their strategy, like building and being like, here's what they did, here's what they've changed, right? You know what I mean?
Or sort cool.
of, yeah, or sort of call it specific strategies. If they could get that person, coverage would be so much better.
And I know, like, for the limit, like the complexity coverage stream,
like the mainstream, yeah, like the mainstreams are not like, if you like the personalities that are there, like they have some interesting like talking over points, right? But like ultimately, like just listen, now that people stream comms, like it's just better to watch like Max or any, like I watched maybe a lot too in terms of like just his...
even, you know, if you're interested in rating, you know, even just at the level we do or the level I do, I don't know how you compare anymore. You can non-basic switch skills like 5 times. No. But you know, last year my guild was around, or my team was around world 500 in killing Nazoth, and it's super, super, super informative listening to Max raid lead, listening to their comms. You know, they have, you know, there are things, someone in my guild commented, they were very meme-y, like my guild is, in comms, which is fun. That makes raiding, that's part of what makes raiding fun. But they are also very disciplined about shutting up when Prog is happening. Like when Max is saying something, the raid is silent.
Yeah. No, they're, I mean, it's very much that sort of turn it on, turn it off type atmosphere where they realize like, hey, when we can joke around and when we need to sort of focus in. So, it was a good breakdown. So, I mean, even to be fair, I said at the beginning, maybe if you're at a lower tier, it doesn't make sense. I think honestly, it's probably good for anybody to watch.
Yeah,
kind of thinking like, through it now.
The only reason I wouldn't watch it is if you're not rating Mythic at all.
Yeah, that's true.
Because there are things like he went over Darkvein. Darkvein's a completely different fight on Heroic. So same with Hungering Destroyer. Hungering Destroyer, you can basically YOLO on Heroic because your stacks don't last long enough.
Right.
Do you even get stacks? I don't remember.
You don't.
Oh, you don't?
Okay. You don't, no.
So then all the stack management stuff is wrong. Or not necessary, rather.
Right, yeah.
So really all you need to do is stand in circles.
Yeah. On that
so, but yeah, if you're Mythic rating, 100% go check it out. It will be in the show notes. It is well worth watching. Even for bosses that you might have already killed and are now going to go and re-clear, you know, there are elements of strat that you can take from that to make your re-clears better.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's it was super cool. I love this type of stuff. So the breakdown is awesome. And if they could pull this into like actual coverage during the race, I think it would make that like that much better. Although I don't know how you get somebody into a walkthrough for a guild and then not have them leak it. You know, like that's the tough part. But yeah, it was good. Yeah, Max is good at that stuff. So
that was a great Christmas present from Max to the raiding community.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. He did his thing. So cool. And that's basically it for this week. Like a pretty slow week. It's Christmas week, so not a ton of stuff going on. You know, other than the race for world first. So let's get into it. I had a couple of points I wanted to talk about. Yeah.
Okay. Well, before we get to those points, do you want to talk about who won?
Oh, yeah, we do. So of course, the boys from North America pulled out another win. Back to back.
You were voting Echo last week. No comment.
No comment. Did we pick teams or did we say days? Because I don't remember.
We did both.
Okay, then shit. I might have picked Echo just to be different.
I think you said Echo just to be contrarian, but it's okay.
Yes, but I think days-wise, so I think I picked Echo. You had Limit, of course, so you win the team prediction. However.
Yeah. But I said I didn't think they were going to kill until Friday.
Exactly.
I took the day you said earlier on Thursday, I think.
I did.
And they killed it Wednesday. So Limit killed Denatrius Wednesday evening.
Yes.
Which is wild, honestly. The wipe count was very low compared to what I expected.
It was about 100, I think it was like 148, 150.
Yeah, something like that. Which, I mean, I
hope my guild
can kill it in 148 pulls when we get there. I kind of doubt that's going to happen because we are not limit raiders, but, you know, that sounds nice.
Yeah, definitely low. I mean, like, definitely pales in comparison of, like, what the Jaina wipes at over, you know, 300.
Yeah.
Even Nazoth was high, right?
Which this is one thing that was interesting that Max covered on his stream was why their wipe count on Denathrius was so much lower. And it is partially because they didn't get to Denathrius until Sunday, Monday.
Yeah.
I think it was Monday morning they started on Denathrius. So they only had that one day of pulls before reset. And then after reset, they had all of that gear.
Right.
So, like, Max was like, he did not think that they could have killed it without the reset of gear, from what it sounded like. But that reset of gear happening so early in their progression on it meant that a lot of the DPS checks in the earlier phases just didn't matter.
Exactly, yeah.
And then the checks, like, when there's a boss that has a check early in the fight, it inflates your wipe count. Like Jaina had the boat was awful and you wiped a lot to the boat. And so you were wiping a lot in the first 90 seconds of the fight. Denathrius, as long as you're making it through the DPS checks in phase 1 and phase 2, like, you're going to wipe a lot at the end of phase 2 / the beginning of phase 3.
Yeah.
And that means that you are spending a lot of time in a, like, 6 to 7 minute, like, pull, wipe, reset, pull, wipe, reset kind of loop.
Right, yeah.
Which means you have fewer pulls.
Yeah. No, for sure. So, I mean, it definitely, yeah. I mean, it was That all makes perfect sense. Yeah, it was about 100. I think it's 143 according to Warcraft logs. I just pulled it up. Yeah, and it was low. They made consistent progression. I mean, like, I watched most of Tuesday, you know, and then almost all day Wednesday last week I had off, so I was able to sort of to jump in and out as I was baking cookies. So it was interesting to see that progression. That fight, I don't know, like the secret phase, while interesting, wasn't
it was less than I expected.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's essentially just your raid splits and you go into two different phases, and if you touch or run over a person in the other phase, you both instantly die. So, like, you basically have to
build. I didn't know that camps. Last part.
Oh, yes, yeah. So that's the white mechanic.
I did not know that. Holy
yeah, so
crap.
If, like, one person runs into another person and they run over each other in two different phases, they both die. There might be no way
in hell my guild is killing this in 140 pulls with that mechanic in place.
Yeah, so there. I don't know if there's an AoE damage component of it. I just know that they wiped a lot at one of the final knockback soaks because the melee got knocked back into the range camp and sort of killed a bunch of people because they weren't positioned. There was, like, a big positioning that had to do there.
Wow, phase 3 is going to be in phase 3 that, as far as, like, prep goes, that's going to make phase 3 insane. It made phase 3 insane. Which really shows, like, that they killed it in 140 wipes with that level of, like, punishment from that mechanic is very impressive.
Yeah, and the interesting thing too is that the soaks, they go in both phases, but if you get the soak circle in one phase, the thing you actually have to soak is in the other phase.
Right. It's like Skitra.
Yeah. So you have to basically...
Oh, yeah. Skitra had this mechanic where you got targeted with an ad. Mm-hmm. The ad would spawn at your location, but the ad would spawn in the opposite phase.
It's
that same mechanic. Except it's an ad, it's a ball that you got to soak. Which also means that because it spawned at your location, when you drop it, you got to get the hell out so that the other phase can go and soak it.
Yeah. It's a very tight movement. Like, we've already talked about this before, like, phase 3 movement wise is very tight, and this mythic phase, while not a huge difference than heroic, does sort of enhance that, like, being in the right position at the right time. Everyone, though, like, not just the tank keeping the boss in the right position or, like, DPS and healers being in the right position, it's like your entire raid has to be moving as sort of one cohesive unit to make sure, like, knockbacks are knocked back in the right position, soaks are dropped in the right position, because you have, like, soaks and a knockback, so if you don't drop your soak in the right position, the people going to soak it are going to then get knocked. Yeah, it's, like, it's super crazy, like, watching them and sort of hearing Max talk about it. So and the only other big thing here is that blood is it Prince or Price? I always think Prince.
Price.
I think it's Price. I think I wrote Prince in the show notes. And then Blood Prince, Price, sorry, Blood Price is back. So again, it's just a, there's a lot.
That's spooky.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, it was a crazy phase. It was
Shush, like, Bruce. Sorry. Talking to chat.
Nice. It was a crazy phase. It was crazy watching, Limit go through it. So, and Echo, I didn't watch much Echo, but, watched a lot of like Max's stuff. So, it was interesting to watch them go through it.
I watched a little bit of it, while Max was, or while Limit was doing their Mythic Zero splits for the week.
Mm-hmm.
That was this week. No, that was this week. Yeah, last week. I watched a little bit of no, hang on. While Limit was doing whatever prep they were doing, like their pre-raid prep from this week, yeah. I watched Echoes.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, it was cool though. But yeah, I mean, Limit knocked it out of the park with another one. They seem to be ahead most of the tier. Never really being close. Like they'd kill a boss, and then it was never one of those situations where like they kill a boss, start on the next one, go to sleep, and then like Echo kills the boss and then catches up on the next one, right? Like Echo always seemed to be behind. Yeah.
And there was some controversy, I know, about the impact of the like delayed release schedule for EU. It didn't end up really mattering this time because I think I heard Echo killed it 16 and a half hours later.
Yes.
So they still would have lost by half an hour even if they had started at the same time and kept the same pace that they had, which obviously they wouldn't have had exactly the same pace with some of the hotfixes that went out before they reached some of the bosses.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, it is what it is. I mean, I have a little bit of section. I don't know if you want to talk about the head start or like that now. But yeah, I mean, I think immediately that was the sort of sum of the commentary, which was like, well, of course, NA is going to get it first. They get a head start and they get these 16 hours. But I mean, it ultimately is never 16 hours because NA maintenance is always longer than EU maintenance on raid release day. So it's generally not as long, and then there's always the bugged versions of encounters that whoever gets, this isn't just an NA specific thing, like if Echo gets to a boss first or another Go gets to a boss first, they'll hit some sort of bug that potentially makes it unkillable, right? Like Sludge Fist and the immunities issue, right? Like on Chain Slam was like Limit couldn't do any progression, right? On that really until they made that fix, or they were told it was going to be fixed and waited till that to come in, so they had a couple hours of sort of downtime there. Stone Legion Generals is, I'm literally, I just started Max's talk on Stone Legion Generals, and it opens with, this is the worst raid fight we've ever progressed on as a guild. So I'm assuming there's like a ton of stuff. There was a ton of stuff there. I mean, even just watching some of the clips, you know.
I totally missed their generals progression. Like, I heard they killed Sludge Fist, and I was like, great, that's cool. I tuned in for the kill. That was awesome.
Yeah.
And I had other things to do, so I went and did other things. And by the time I was like, okay, I'm going to go look at, you know, Max's stream, they were on Denathrius.
Yeah.
Like, they killed that boss in like, you know, a day and a half, if that.
Yeah, it was quick, but it was buggy, and there was some. I mean, the interest, like the Wicked Blade's not hitting players through the winds. We talked about that a little bit.
Yeah.
And some other like they had a lot of despawning adds or adds falling through the floor as they come in. Adds not dropping the orbs in the intermission phases when they should.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, I think in general, like the head start, I think the head start only matters if something is killed, you know, within the first like 4 or 5 days, right? Like if an end boss doesn't survive the weekend, then the head start essentially like becomes sort of a moot point, right?
Yeah. It's if like Emerald Nightmares are probably the only raid,
right?
That I would say it really mattered.
Yeah,
because Emerald Nightmare died in 2 days, 3 days, 1 day.
I feel like it was a day because like Exorcist stayed up late and just to try Xavius and ended up killing it. Like, I'm almost positive, like, somehow in my mind, it's, like, one of those things where, like, people put, they didn't push too hard the first day because they thought Xavius would be unkillable, and Exorcist, like, gets there, pulls it, like, twice, and then, like, and it dies.
Yeah.
like, in my mind, that's how that went down, so, but, yeah, I mean, it was, It was not like that. So, I mean, I think there's merit on both sides of the argument. Is like, look, maybe the head start matters, maybe it doesn't. In my mind, though, like, it goes long enough that like Limit and Echo, or really we can say like North America and EU, get the same amount of time on a boss. So if it makes it to the first reset, it's whoever kills it first, right?
Yeah.
Like I don't think the head start matters.
There's a whole bunch of things. Like, there's the issue with bugs, like we talked about. There's also the issue with resets. Like, obviously Limit had their reset on Tuesday, which means that they got extra gear on Tuesday. Echo didn't. Echo got extra gear on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And if that gear ends up mattering, like it did on Denatrius, then that's, you know, that changes things. It's
right. But then you look at, I mean, then you look at like Limit and their reclear on Tuesday, which was like 2 hours quicker than Echo's. Like that reclear, to be fair, like if you really want to break it down and be like a super nerd about the world first race, like that reclear won Limit the race, like hands down, like because they were so smooth. Like they had less than 5 wipes on generals, I believe, when they went back, which is like out of control for a second kill. I don't know. The head start is I think it'll always be an issue because I don't actually think we'll ever get a global release.
There's too many issues with it technically.
Yeah, it was just it was funny that was the first thing that was said. So
the only thing I could see happening is they could do a staggered release of like the first half of the raid or something like that, and then open up the latter half at the same time, you know. But there's still the issues with scheduling. That sidesteps a bunch of the issues with maintenance and developers being on hand and that kind of thing. But there's still, like, if you open it up at, like, noon NA time, that's what?
4 a.m.? 6, 7 p.m. Oh, like, PM, sorry, right. Noon. Yeah, like, noon, yeah. So it'd be, like, the afternoon, like, the dinner time for Europe, basically.
Yeah.
So, if we're talking East Coast hours when you say noon.
Yeah, East Coast.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, then you get guilds who get to the end first and they have a bunch of time to do other stuff to gain gear. Like, you know, if NA still gets the first half first, they'll, you know, have more time when the actual end bosses get released to do like plus spam and things like that.
Even that doesn't really solve anything. Like, I don't think there's a clean way they could do it. They would actually be sane for the people working on the game.
Right.
And for the
game itself. Like, yeah. I think if we think not about like just the raiders or like the teams, but like doing a global release requires you to essentially sync resets for a few weeks before that, right? Because the biggest thing is like if they release the raid at the same time, that's great. But then if they do that just for the week the raid is supposed to release, Europe gets 24 less hours or 12 or whatever, or 16 less hours of like heroic week type farming, right? Yeah. So like that's an issue. That'll be an issue there, right?
They would need to like just globally move to the same reset time.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And there could be a way where you do it like a few weeks before the raid release, and then like after like the final boss are killed by like maybe a couple guilds, you go back to staggered. But then like you confuse the player base. Like, when does everything actually release? Right. Like 1 week it's on Tuesday evening. The next week it's on like Wednesday morning.
So, I don't think they will ever do a global release just due to practical things with the game and taking down, you know, the game for the entire world, working on it at all the same time and then putting it back up. You know, there's consistently issues the first day of a major patch in NA that then are not seen on EU. You know, if you've been in the Brewmaster channels, we get thanked a lot for being the NA beta testers. And there is truth to that, you know?
The biggest truth to that is like the maintenance window, right? Like in NA, it's consistently longer than EU for major releases. Like downtime is like 9-10 hours, like where EU will maybe be down for like an hour and a half, 2 hours, right? So I think NA does a lot of that testing, and then we do a lot of like the, like even this tier, like the heroic damage, like the damage on heroic was modified before EU went in there, and like NA had to suffer through a raid night of like 10k a tick Sin Seekers on Huntsman, right? Like, so yeah, I mean, global releases are sort of a pipe dream, and I don't think you do a fair world first race by doing it like a competitive realm, like the tournament realm for world first, because I think there's a lot that goes into the raid beyond just the strategy that I think more guilds, I mean, maybe you get more guilds participating at that point, right? If you don't have to gear up a bunch of characters and spend a bunch of time, but it sort of lessens the accomplishment, right? Because to me, the race is more than just the week you run Mythic. I think it's like the prep work going into it. Like the
and 2 to 3 weeks. We have seen that prep, you know, make differences. A lot of the guilds that are progressing in the top 10 are running Brewmaster Monks because they didn't have Windwalker prepped.
Right.
And because they didn't have another, like, I guess they had another good tank prepared because that's how tanks work at that level. But, you know, they didn't have a Windwalker ready to go, and they didn't want their main tank playing Windwalker instead of tanking. Whereas, you know, Limit prepared a Windwalker, Trill played Windwalker for all of their progression, and they had Prot Warrior and Vengeance Demon Hunter, and they were, aside from, I think, Echo, the only ones that ran that comp.
And that
level of, like, if this were a tournament realm, as soon as, you know, Fat Shark Yes or whoever saw that, they could go, oh shit, we should do that. And just go, bam, you got a Windwalker, I level geared up and ready to step in the instance. And that kind of, like, higher level, like, grand strategy kind of thing is a cool part of the race. While I do think that things like the ability to spam islands for 24 hours a day in the 2 weeks prior to raid release are a major detriment to the world first race, the way things have worked this expansion, I think, is a lot more sane. With a lot of things being, you know, weekly capped, and then certain things like Mythic Plus, the eye level being lower the first week means that there's not a ton of value in just doing them 24/7.
For sure. And I think that sort of prep, and I think Matt, like, just going back to sort of Max's breakdown, right? Like, their points about why they built their comp the way they built it for Denathrius was, like, interesting to see the differences between them and, say, even Echo, right?
Yeah.
Talking about healer comps, they didn't run Holy, like, Limit ran Holy Paladins, right? Echo didn't have any ready, according to Max. I mean, maybe they did, but it didn't seem like they did. And like Windwalker again was the sort of the dark horse, right, coming out of the race, was with Trill playing that, and like teams sort of now swapping off of Windwalkers, getting them ready, just because, like, with Brewmaster not being the top tier god tier tank that it has been in the past, right, you still need that debuff.
And also, Windwalker is one of the best melee DPS right now.
This
is one thing that I think a lot of people might have missed because of the fact that parts of Windwalker's damage were not implemented in SimC. Still not be implemented, specifically Empowered Tiger Lightning from Zuin, the level 58 ability.
It might be soon. I saw a screenshot from Hina.
Hina's been working on it. It required some work beyond just the Gale Force implementation that was in for Touch of Death. And so that's actually a sizable chunk of damage. So if you're just going off of sim numbers and not actually, like, playing things on beta, you would miss that.
Right.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people did, because Windwalker's been trash for a long time.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. So, I mean, I think that's that part of the race still matters, that where, like, a tournament realm would get rid of it, right? Because if you could just reroll a new class at a certain eye level.
I think Blizzard is also not going to do a tournament realm because it would exacerbate class stacking even more than it already has. Like, now, if you really bet on, like, if they had bet all in on Unholy DKs, and, I mean, they ran four of them, but, you know.
Right.
If they had really gone whole hog, it was just like, okay, our only melee DPS are going to be Unholy DKs or something equally insane. A single nerf, you know, just completely ruins them.
On the other hand,
if it's a tournament realm, like, they can just play eight Unholy DKs or five or seven or whatever.
Whatever the magic number is. Yeah.
And Blizzard does not want to see class stacking. So if they put it on a tournament realm, it would probably be with class restrictions. And I would think at that point, the guilds just wouldn't do it. They would just play on the real realm where they could class stack when they wanted to.
Yeah, and do whatever they wanted to get through it. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, that's what I think. I mean, global release, sort of a pipe dream. I think other, like, I talked a little bit, I put this in the notes right a little bit, but like with other games, like I know that in Destiny 2, they do a global raid release, but they also do it in a, what they call competition mode, where they limit essentially your power level.
Yeah.
So like they limit your power level for, it's like 24, 48 hours. And like, essentially from a world first perspective, like if you kill it within that, you get like an in-game item, like it's an emblem or something or a title or whatever. That'd be one way to do it, but because there's still the light, like in Destiny 2, there is still a reason to grind up to the cap, so you don't start at the cap. So there's still work to be done going into the raid release, right? And then the raid release is, you know, global at that point, which would honestly be
have elements of that, like the first week before the raid without Titan Forging,
right?
Mythic Plus gear is capped, raid gear is capped,
right?
So we kind of have that.
We do, but actually, yeah.
There is an element of that that is kind of funny to me, you know, where it's like 24 or 48 hours. Like the world first race in WoW is so much different than anything else.
Yeah, it's so much longer.
I was explaining it to a friend recently. He was commenting, he had tuned into my stream a couple times, and he's like, all you guys do is wipe. Like, all you guys do is die to this boss. He was looking at our Nazoth progression. He's like, I tuned in and I watched for like 30 minutes, and all you guys did was die. And you didn't kill anything. I've never seen you kill a boss. And I was like, yeah. World first race is going on right now. This was on like Tuesday or something. And I was like, yeah. And we don't expect them to actually kill the final boss this week. And like, that was just a mind blown moment for them. It was like, oh my God.
Yeah. That's, I don't know of other PvE like games, like Final Fantasy would be like the only other big MMO that has a PvE component like this. And like I said,
yeah, and too. Their like Savage raids are normally cleared pretty quickly, like on the same time scale as Destiny raids. Ultimate raids, I don't know. Those are so infrequent. I don't know if there's like three of them now over three expansions. So I don't know if we can really draw a pattern.
Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if something like pulling an idea from a different game would work. I guess I didn't realize the power level cap comparison makes sense. So I had not put two and two together there. But yeah, I mean, just trying to close this one off. I don't think global release is coming. I think, you know, it is what it is, what we have. And I think the imperfectness of it makes it sort of interesting. That too, and like, I think that the time difference doesn't at the end of the day make a huge deal. Like I think if you look at guilds, like really kind of listen to like what sort of like the limits and echoes of the world say, like there's very few of them that sort of point to that, well, NA gets there first, right? I think that in the moment people get frustrated and they yell and they'll be like, this sucks. But I think if you take a step back and you ask like anybody from Echo, even that might have had a different opinion as limit killed it today, I think they'd be like, look, they just beat us. Like, it's not like the 16 hours didn't make a difference at the end of the day.
And there are cases where it's more obvious that start advantage, you know, head start advantage didn't matter. You know, Ulier was a big one where Feather Devourer was literally unkillable until they hotfix nerfed it.
Right. Exactly.
Most raid tiers don't have something on that level, but frequently there are things that get tuned down. Sometimes things get tuned up, but they are very careful not to do those until the first reset, you know, like Council of Blood.
I guess the only other thing I want to talk about on the race was just the turning off streams or off stream kills that happened, which was interesting. So I'd like, there's kind of two instances of this that really matter. So there was Limits Council kill, and then there's Echo when they started their Denathrys progression, which is those two. So
yeah,
I don't know if you watch Max's stream, but Max's stream is funny when he goes over their council kill
because he has to go and try and dig up a VOD for it because nobody was streaming.
Right? Yeah, nobody was streaming, nobody was recording. They had shut off production in the Complexity Center, so like literally there was like one person that had it, and it's what their videos of, it's of the Warlock there.
One person did their shout, like they weren't even like running OBS recording or anything like that. Okay. It was shadow play.
Yeah. So it's
which is that NVIDIA thing that lets you like pull out a certain amount of recent video and turn it into an actual video. Yeah. And so like there was one person that caught it in time and did their shadow play and saved it. Otherwise there would be no video footage of this kill on the Limit side.
Yeah, which is funny because they were basically testing their strategy for the dark recital, which is the you link with someone and drop puddles behind you.
Yeah.
So you sort of have to like spread certain ways. And I don't think they're Max was like, well, if you got linked, you went right. If you didn't get linked, you went left, which is like what my guild did. And I don't know how big of a strat that was, right? Maybe we copied them. I don't know. But it seems like a pretty easy, like straightforward thing to do with this mechanic.
Yeah, the thing to recognize about that. So we had paranoias on the Zoth where people had to like spread and stack.
Yeah.
But there's no spread requirement on this. You just have to stack with them and keep moving.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It makes it pretty simple. So they basically were just testing, hey, making sure that worked, and they come back in the next day and kill it. And what they found was that I talked about this earlier, which was in the hotfix notes, was that the jumping debuff, I even forget the name of it.
Dancing Fever. Right?
Yeah, Dancing Fever wasn't triggering as often. So they essentially told the devs who were watching at the time, like, hey, this isn't triggering. The devs said, we're working on it, but you can go and kill it if you want. Because like we screwed up, it's not on you. And yeah, they basically got, I think, 3 on their kill when you should be getting like, I think, upwards of like 6 or 8. So yeah. That was why they killed it overnight. They weren't expecting to. It's just the boss was bugged. So that was limits.
Like, it should be stressed when you say bugged. Like most of the fight worked. It was one basically raid damage mechanic wasn't
which is out. So the raid which damage is a lot of range damage.
It is a lot of raid damage. You are totally right. But they also came back in and like one shot it after the hotfix on Tuesday. So
yeah. So I think
they could have. I don't think they would have accidentally killed it Friday night or Tuesday night or whatever it is when they accidentally did it with that raid damage in place. But I don't think that bug made much of a difference in terms of their progression.
No.
And the hotfix did not go in until after reset, meaning that, you know, Echo progressed the same version of the boss. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So then Echo turned off their streams after killing Stone Legion generals. I guess it was. Was it Monday evening or
I don't know. I actually wasn't aware of that until just now.
Yeah. So they turned off their streams after they killed Stone Legion generals. But I believe it was either Monday evening or like Tuesday morning for their initial Denathrius progression. It's interesting that they did this. And I think the biggest reason. And so like a bunch of people were sort of upset with it, like from a sponsorship perspective, like people are like, oh, your sponsor is going to get angry with you, whatever, it doesn't matter. But yeah, they turned off their stream. And I think the reasoning is, I don't know. I didn't talk to these guys. But my understanding is that they basically did it to not give Limit any information, right? So Limit was going into reset, going into another round of gear. And so any sort of progression or any sort of video that Limit had on how Echo was doing the fight, we just give them a heads up, right? Because they'd have a reset of gear, they could steal or sort of borrow tactics, anything like that. So a bunch of people were upset about it, but from like a tactical perspective, it made sense. Like
from a pure like we want to win the race perspective, it makes sense. It's kind of scummy in my view because like Limit hit everything else first, including Denathrius. They hit Denathrius first. Mm-hmm. They streamed the whole thing, Council of Blood notwithstanding, and they had their stream on the whole time. And so while I don't think Echo is like watching Limit stream and cribbing strats from them, because on some of these bosses, like trying to figure out the strat as they're doing it and why they're doing it and then taking it and trying to implement it with your own raid team, like it's just not going to work.
Right.
Like
the
Limit players and the Echo players, they go in already knowing what their strat is when they pull a boss for the very first time. They all know what their strat is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
For everything except the end boss, and even though they have some idea of how it's going to work,
right? Yeah.
So that's not really a huge thing, but I do think it is. I don't know. At the same time, Limit sort of did it because that's how they accidentally killed Council of Blood with their streams off. They wanted to test that mechanic and then accidentally killed the boss, but they didn't want to give away that was their strategy for dealing with it because they thought Council of Blood might be a sort of like soft wall for guilds. So. I think doing that is I can understand if it's like, we're doing 30 minutes of like testing this mechanic and then we're going to hop off for the night.
Yeah.
But if it's like, we're progressing for the next 8 hours with our stream off.
Yeah. It's a tough one. I mean, I think I'm on the side of Echo here in terms of like, I think they made the right choice. Like, the ultimate end goal here is to win the race, not to stream to a bunch of people that want to watch you win it. So, I mean, in terms of, like, I think you even said this, like, in terms of pure competition, it's the right way to do it. The community perception always, I think, is negative where it shouldn't be. Because, like, the community perception of them doing this was like, oh, they're have some, like, secret exploit strat, or they're, like, you know, they don't really care. All they want to do is win. They're behind. They're scared. Like, that sort of stuff. And it's just, you give your competition, like, a free view of probably the first, like, phase and a half, you know, to almost the full phase two of a fight where they can just watch it and have extra gear and then go and crush it. Like, you know, they'll see timings. They'll see damage numbers, like, HP numbers, things like that. So it's, you know, from a competitive standpoint, I'm okay with it. Like, I'm
from a competitive standpoint, the correct thing is just not stream, basically, regardless. Like,
if
they were all strictly, like, trying to play to win, they would not stream it, period.
Agreed. I agree with that.
That's obviously, there's other benefits that come from streaming, whether it's sponsorship stuff or, you know, being able to get people involved in viewer raids to funnel loot on Heroic Week, anything like that.
Yeah, no, I guess exposure would be, like, the sort of word you'd use there, right? Like, the exposure is great for World First Racing. So, yeah, I mean, it was one night. You know, it sucks that you didn't get to see them, like, the start of their fight. But, I mean, coming out of that, they were still behind, I think. So, like,
when Limit killed it, they were just barely sub 10%. They were at, like, 8%.
Yeah.
On Denathrius, which, like, you're like, oh, 8%, it's almost dead. But 8% is still, like, a tenth of the boss remaining, and you can hit 8% with, you know, nobody alive and still have a lot of the boss left to do.
Oh yeah. And like that, like watching their phase three, the worst overlaps are those sub like 15, 10% overlaps. So like that's where the fight really gets difficult, is like when you have that end thing. So, I mean, I don't think they would have caught them, but yeah, it was an interesting lore, sort of like mini drama thing that like, I think people just made a bigger deal out of it than it was. Like, they just didn't want to give Limit info on a boss that they'll about to start with another reset of gear. So,
yeah. Like I said, I don't like it, but at the same time, I understand why they did it. And I think from a tactical perspective, it is totally correct.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. Oh, man. All right. Anything else on the race tonight?
I'm trying to think. You have on here world third predictions.
Oh, yeah, no, before we get to that, I just wanted to see if there's anything else on sort of just the global release stuff, how the final boss went before we get into world third, because I have a sleeper.
Okay, you have a sleeper. I don't have anything else on the race itself other than that I didn't watch as much of it as I expected to, given that I was off this week.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I was off this week, not last week, and most of the race was last week, but I didn't really watch much Denathrius progression because I was just doing other things during the day that I needed to pay attention to. I wish I had seen more of their Denathrius progression, but I'm gonna, you know, it's gonna be a bit before we hit Denathrius, so I'll have time to prepare. So
yeah it was I watched more of like the BDGG stuff than a lot of the Limit stuff. I watched Max once they started to get like sub like 15% pulls on Denathrius, but a lot of times I was just sort of watching BDG go through it. I love those boards.
Yeah, so. And I mean, one of the things that's useful as an officer in a guild is trying to look at their progression. It's not just, okay, what strategy do they use? It's what are people wiping to when Limit's doing this, when Echo's doing this, when BDGG is doing this. Because that's things that we can go and, like, we can try and make sure our raiders are aware of those things that are going to kill us, and then spend less time progressing those mechanics, you know, if... Mm-hmm. People running over each other in phase three is a big deal. We will make sure that when we do our pull number one, we already have plans in place to make sure people don't run over each other in phase three.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Makes perfect sense. Cool. All right. Yeah. I think now world third predictions. So world
third.
As of tonight, this is what, Saturday night, East Coast time, in the United States of America. There are no other guilds on Denathrius.
Yeah.
So every guild is still trying to kill Stone Legion generals. So if you haven't...
Any idea how close any of them are?
I do. So actually, fun fact, if you pull up the Warcraft logs Race for World First page, it actually shows the pull count and the best percentage of guilds that enable competitive mode on their log. So basically, it's not going to tell you like what their comp is or anything about the details, but like even if their logs are private, it'll show you like what their best pull was and how many pulls they have on the boss. So if you pull that up,
look at that.
And my sleeper pick is going to be very apparent when you look at the first sort of top four. I guess maybe top five. So as you scroll down, you can see like, you know, like he's got their third, their best pulls 47%. They've got 330 pulls.
And then there's Fat Shark, yes.
Fat Shark, it, yes.
19.4%, 157 pulls in. They, wow, that's actually crazy. Looking at like pieces at 47% with 330 pulls.
Fat Shark, yes, is the best guild in the world. I don't give a I don't care what anyone else says. They're the best guild in the world. If they day raided, they would crush everyone else. They would be a perennial world first team. It's absolutely ridiculous how good these guys are. In any event, that's my sleeper pick for world third. By
the way. That's what I was going to say. Like,
like literally half the pulls of pieces and at 20%.
The like Lumen's new main tank came from Fat Shark. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, and when Max was talking about that on his stream, like he had nothing but good things to say about Fat Shark Yes Raiders. And I think he actually might have said basically what you did, that if they day raided, they would be, if not a literal world first winning team, like very competitive with it.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, even right now, they're maybe a contender for world third, which like imagine being method, like SCO's method,
yeah,
day raiding, and then not even getting world third.
Yeah. Or even like pieces.
How soul crushing would that be?
Yeah, but even if you look at like pieces day raids, BDGG yeah, day raids, like Imperative has day raided, like those other guilds, like it just, I don't know if I would feel bad because I feel like there's like some, I mean, being in like putting myself in the shoes of a person who day raids, I'd feel like kind of upset. But at the same time, I'd have to take my hat off to like just how good that team is.
Like, absolutely.
Like in terms of prep, like the amount of preparation that has to go in, like before you even pull, like, and sort of like knowing a strat, seeing a strat and then executing is like huge. So, I mean, that's my sleeper, maybe not even a sleeper pick, but that's my pick for world third actually is I think Fat Shark, yes, gets it. And I think ultimately they're probably helped by the holidays because I don't know how much day rating like the other guilds are doing.
That's true.
So, like, I think the holidays actually helped probably them.
Probably took at least, you know, Thursday, Friday.
Yeah.
I mean, even if they were still day raiding at that point, because at that point it would have been almost 2 full weeks of day raiding.
Yeah.
Which is a lot for someone that's no longer in contention, even for world second.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like, that's the crazy thing. But, yeah, I think Fat Shark, yes, sleeper pick for world third. I just think they're too good. Like the longer this goes and the less time guilds can sort of put into the raid on like a daily basis, I just think it works out in their favor.
The better the odds are of a Fat Shark Yes win. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. But yeah, that when I pulled that up today, for like early this morning, and I was like, they got to 12% on 150 pulls. This is absolutely ridiculous when you look at like pieces and the guilds around them are 100 pulls more than them and at a higher percentage too. So it's crazy. So that's my sleeper pick. Those dudes, that's crazy. But yeah, I mean, that's world third predictions. I mean, hopefully we'll see a world third. I mean, like we said, like these guys are all still progressing on generals. So they still have to even start on Denathrius, and Denathrius for at least limit was 143 pull boss. So you expect that number to come down a little bit now that guilds have seen the strat and like the bugs are mostly gone. So
I don't even know if I would expect that to go down, really. How many pulls was limit's Stone Legion? I still have that pulled up. How many pulls was limit's Stone Legion?
Does it actually say on that page?
It should. Complexity limit defeats Stone Legion generals after 292 pulls.
Yeah,
so like a bunch of these guilds are actually already at or close to limits pulls on Stone Legion generals. Post reset, you know.
Yeah, that's true. So maybe it won't be less. Yeah.
Like there is, you know, there's an element of strategy here where like Limit's developing this draft, but there's also the element of Limit just has actual fucking insane players.
Yeah.
And while Fat Shark Yes does, Echo does, Pieces does, to it's clear that it's not to the same extent that like Limit does.
Oh yeah.
Limit's roster has just shown over and over again this tier and last year that they are nuts.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, even, and we talked about even like Echo, right, in terms of like general pull count, like those guys build a strategy and then just go and execute it, right? Like there's not a lot of mistakes in terms of like once they settle on something they want to do, they might take a while to talk about it, right? They might break for 15, 20 minutes every pull and then talk about something, but every pull they get better. And I think they're very good at sort of that execution, right?
Yeah.
Which I think is, yeah, that's the one thing I pulled out of Max's stream today too, was like, look, like, it's funny when you hear Max or really any world first, and it's kind of a side tangent here to this world third prediction, but it's sort of like them talking about like what they consider good classes versus bad classes. And like his point is like, this literally matters to me in my guild. He's like, in your guild, you should literally bring your best players on the best classes. Cause like balance at the level you're going to get to this doesn't matter. Cause he's like, here, I might need a Devo to survive this mechanic where you just need a Trank or a Revival. Right. Like you don't need the reduction, you just need the throughput. So
and the same thing goes for like he was talking about tanks as well. And like they obviously didn't play a Brewmaster. That kind of was a surprise. But looking at how tank balance actually panned out, I don't think it's all that surprising. You know? Like all the tanks in raid are relatively close. Brewmaster, I think, is actually one of the worst ones right now at low gear. Which is never how Brewmaster's been since Legion because of how Stagger worked. But now that Stagger scales so heavily off of agility, and we have, like, I'm 207. I still haven't DR'd Stagger's agility conversion yet. Like, I'm still getting, like, two, three more. By the time I get to 215, I will have 4 or 5% more Stagger. So, like, the gear scaling is there, but it's not as good without the gear, and that's what Limit cares about. Whereas like Vengeance is actually just nuts right now in a lot of ways. Prot Warrior still has shield block, and there's not a lot of fights this tier that require you to be tanking 24/7. Sludge Fist does. Sludge Fist is spooky. Sludge Fist is spooky on everything though, and Prot Warrior is still good enough for that, and they bring Rally, which has been buffed, so.
Right. And you're not running DPS warriors, so they bring Shout too. Generally speaking, you're not running DPS warriors. So, yeah, I mean, that's the, yeah, that's the one sort of key point coming out of that, which was, insane players, and they're playing sort of their best classes. So, but yeah, those, dude, Fat Shark, yes, man, those guys. Why are they so good?
I'm there with you. Let's go Fat Shark, yes.
Dude, that's my new, I think I'm just going to root for them every tier. Like, they're just going to be like, I don't care about Limit or Echo.
Just hope for the upset where the like the guild that doesn't day raid.
Oh yeah,
gets world first. Imagine that happening. What would have to go wrong for that to actually happen?
I don't think there's a world where that happens because Limit's
unless there's something that's like totally broken.
Yeah,
that accidentally happens for them.
I could see it happening if like EU was the only place where guilds played, right? Because then you could get like a reset of gear and they get a kill on a final boss like within the reset time. But like that doesn't happen with Limit being in NA because they get at least 24 hours on a boss after reset to like kill it before Pieces before Fat Shark Yes gets there. But I mean, I could see a world where like they get to a final boss, you know, it's unkillable at the current gear levels. They get through a reset, get a quick clear, and then they kill it that night, right?
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I could see like Pieces killed. And Pieces
Unat,
where that was just like a 600 pull boss, and it came out of nowhere because nobody was streaming at the time, really. And
well, they picked the sixth strat, like they picked Shaman, right? Like that was their
thing. That was that was why they killed the boss before anybody else, is their Shaman strat.
Yeah,
and I could see something like that happening, where like if Fat Shark Yes gets to a boss and everybody's on the boss.
Mm-hmm.
And either the boss just breaks in some way that lets them get the kill, which honestly kind of sucks when something like that happens. But it could also be, you know, they come up with it, just a mind-blowing strat that nobody else has come up with. It seems unlikely, as many other like yeah. really top-tier people are in Echo and Limit, but you never know.
Yeah,
that's about the only situation I could see it, where like basically the day rating prior to that just doesn't matter.
Right,
and it all comes down to who can kill the last boss most efficiently.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's for sure makes sense. But yeah, it would take a lot, I think, for them to be there. But I mean, it's fun to watch those guys progress because I think they do it in such a...
I am going to have to go and watch yeah. them prog because that's actually something like my guild raids two nights a week. Obviously, we look to use our raid hours efficiently. And like, Fat Jack, yes, is nuts. I need to go and watch yeah. their streams and see what I can learn. Like, I've been watching Limits, but Limits day rating.
Yeah.
And they have a little bit more time. So there's things I can learn, obviously. Like, they're way, way above where we are. So, like, there's tons I can still learn from that. But I am very curious to look at Fat Shark S and see how they're how they're doing things and fitting so much into so little time.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the interesting thing if they ever do sort of, like, a retrospective on, like, their raid tier, like, what they do. Would be to hear about like their preparation, because that'd be the coolest part of what they do is like, how do they get ready for a boss fight? Like, how do they get a boss to 12% and 150 pulls when other guilds are double that, and also triple their health percentage essentially, right? Like, they're yeah. So yeah, it's Fat Shark, yes, sleeper world third, you heard it here first. I think they're gonna get it. So so cool. Any other topics for tonight? I think that's all I had.
No, there's a couple of things that you have on here. Before we hit the outro, apparently Babylonius himself is going to be interviewing Trill.
Yeah, so Babs tweeted out today that tomorrow at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which it actually is not going to matter because you're not going to... Well, if you're listening to this live, it'll matter. If you're listening to this in retrospect, go check out the VOD. But Babs' channel, yeah. But
it may not be immediately linked because it may not be up immediately. But I will link it once it's available.
Yep. So Babs is interviewing Trill tomorrow. That is Sunday, December 27th, on his channel at 5 p.m. Eastern. So if you're listening to this live, awesome. Go check it out. If you're listening to this in retrospective, grab the VOD. But yeah, he's going to talk to Trill. You know, tweet him questions. Just ask about how he did all the damage he does. But yeah, it should be really, it'll be interesting for Windwalker players, and you know, it'd be interesting to see Trill's point of view. I consider Trill the best World of Warcraft player in the game. So it's always nice to hear from, you know, the Messi or the Ronaldo, pick your poison, of the World of Warcraft world, sort of talk about the game. So
I know exactly about enough about both of those references to know about the fact that those are both controversial comparisons.
That's why I gotta mention both of them, you know, in the terms of the football or soccer world, right? But yeah, I mean, Trill, like, Limit, you know, Windwalker, but he's also like a multiple BlizzCon winner, like rank one on tons of classes in terms of like PvP arena stuff. And you know, he's on Limit, so he's got two world firsts under his belt and a bunch of other, you know, US firsts even previously. So dude's a straight gamer. So it'll be interesting to see or hear from him on how the race went and like why Windwalker is sort of why it was being slept on. I think that'll be the most interesting question I have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So speaking of PvP though, I do want to add one more thing before we hit the outro. You should be doing PvP right now. Arenas kind of suck. Okay. I was playing Prot Paladin Boomkin 2s with a guildie yesterday. Okay. If you've done any arenas, you're going to hate me. But what we would do is he would start in stealth. He would get ready to convoke. I would bop him before he broke stealth so he couldn't get no physical interrupts or stuns or damage while he was convoking, and he could just get a full convoke off and hopefully kill someone before they realized what was going on. And if they didn't, you know, wog, 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 wog.
So dumb, dude.
It's super, super dumb. Like, PvP is in an awful state in so many ways, but you really don't need much right now in order to get meaningful gear from PvP. 1400 is basically free, and it gets you a 207 piece, at least. Like right now, I'm going to get a 207 piece, a weapon on my paladin, which is a huge upgrade. That's 30 something eye levels. My monk is wearing two PvP pieces that just go in slots that he just didn't get loot from the raid on. And that's the real value of PvP right now. It's not a good primary gearing system in the same way that just doing raids or just doing Mythic Plus is not a good primary gearing system, but there's so much value from doing that to get those last couple of item slots filled out that I really think that if you are raiding right now, that is something you should be pursuing. And arenas like don't take that much, like a lot of arena matches are like 30 seconds to a minute right now. So you can get through a lot of them real fast.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, no, and the cool thing about that too is, like you said, you can target a specific piece, so it's literally used to fill in like gear slots, and it's very very consistent, I'll say.
Yes,
which is which super is consistent.
Like I know people in our guild that have like you know been farming Tyrant of Scythe for shoulders and like just haven't gotten them because you do a 13 Tyrant of Scythe and sometimes you time it, sometimes you don't, sometimes you're the sole male user and well. The wrong shoulders dropped. The right, shoulders for the other armor type dropped. And you can't use them. Or they drop for someone else and you can't trade them. And there's all these things that can go wrong. Whereas like in that same time you could have ground out PvP, gotten your conquest cap, and bought shoulders. And they would not be as good. Like 1600 is I think 213, so that's heroic eye level. And you don't start getting up to mythic eye level until like 2100, which honestly, I'm not hitting 2100.
And neither am I.
I know my limits. I'm not even going to try. Yeah. I'll hit 1600 and I'll be happy with being able to buy like 213 pieces than the slot I need.
Right. Yeah.
But would highly recommend that if you're raiding right now, you pursue that.
Yeah. I did a little bit of it. Honestly, just because I have a couple of like legendary slots I like swap out of. So like the off pieces in those slots are a little bit low.
Yeah, I'm the same deal. I still have an off piece that I need to replace, but I getting the pieces I always used upgraded was a higher priority.
Exactly, that's for sure.
Anything else? So no Q&A today. It's Christmas week. We didn't get questions from people.
Look. Let's from us to you. We gave you the week off from me trying to pronounce your terrible, terrible names. So. That's my present.
Everyone's Christmas present to Anam is that Anam gets a week off of.
I feel like it's the other way around. Like I don't. People don't have to suffer through me trying to.
I think pronounce. This is like a buy. Like both sides benefit from this arrangement.
That's fair. I'd agree to that. For certain.
But I think that is going to just about wrap it up for today. If you enjoyed today's podcast and you want to support it. And all the other work that we do over on the Peak of Serenity, whether it's guide writing, which again, I'm going to plug Kiov's Raid and Dungeon Guides for Brewmasters. They are fantastic. We have our Brewmaster guides. We have our Mistweaver and Windwalker guides. You know, all kinds of work that goes into maintaining and writing those. You can do that over on our Patreon at patreon.com/Peak of Serenity. And of course, not everybody can financially contribute. If you do, you know, want to still support the site and the community, you know, come hang out in Discord. We've got channels just for that, and it's a good time. Anyway, as always, thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.